the FedEx St. Jude Championship. He is more than basketball, but you are an expert with the Grizzlies and the NBA, and we want to get your thoughts. I know you just wrote about possibilities for the draft. We got a little bit more understanding of what's going to happen with the Grizzlies, but not the puzzle's not complete. We'll know on May 10th. Talk about that in a second, but what do you think of the Grizzlies West? What do you think of the Lakers with what Marcus Smart and with what Luke Kennard's doing? Of course, Laravia's part of their rotation. Three former Grizzlies helping the Lakers get out to a 2-0 lead on the Rockets.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. And I mean, it just puts things in perspective for you. You know, we never got to see Marcus Smart kind of healthy, right, over the course of his time and Memphis, and he's really kind of found a defined role with the Lakers in terms of, you know, the defense. Teams are leaving him open. Like, he made 5 3-pointers, but he played 62 games this season.
Yeah,
you know, in 2 seasons with the Grizzlies, Ja Morant played 39 games. I mean, not Ja Morant, excuse me, Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart played 39 games with the Grizzlies over those 2 years, and even if you considered the time in Washington, I think it was 54 games over those 2 seasons. So he played more in L.A. this 1 year than he played the last couple years. And then you factor in the fact that Luke Kennard, you know, I've been seeing a lot of people talk about how, wow, the Lakers are the first team to you know, use Luke Kennard the right way, so to speak. And you know, he's definitely in a really good role. I mean, you've seen over 20 points in both games against Houston. He's playing heavy minutes. And I remember, you know, in Memphis, when the one playoff series that Luke Kennard got to be a part of against the Lakers, well, before OKC and all that, but when they played the Lakers, I just specifically remember in that situation, a lot of those games towards the end, mm-hmm. Luke Kennard wouldn't be in the game.
Right.
And we would talk about it with Taylor Jenkins, and part of the problem was, you know, LeBron James and those guys were going at, you know, Ja Morant, Desmond Bane a little bit, and they didn't want to take Dillon off the floor and with his defensive, you know, ability and put in Luke Kennard, even though he would have added offense. So it's just a different situation. It's different personnel, but yeah, it is interesting seeing those guys kind of have that success. You know, Luke Kennard played 78 games this season. I think he played 65 with the Grizzlies last year, so he was, you know, decently healthy. But these guys have been available. These guys have taken their game to another level, and they've really kind of flourished.
And Laravia played all 82. But the thing was Smart that it's. You know, when the Grizzlies acquired him, it was a playoff, obviously very playoff tested veteran. You knew what he could do in the postseason. That's kind of what you hoped out of him. We see him now in these two games, what he's doing in the postseason. But with the Grizzlies, we never got to see him in the postseason. So the way you kind of acquired him for, he never was able to do here.
Yeah, he was supposed to be that veteran who, when you got to that point of the season, could be reliable, it could be dependable, but yeah, it never materialized. I actually thought in his first season in Memphis, he was pretty solid, probably playing, you know, some of the better overall, like, basketball of his career. I remember, I think he was averaging around 14 points. He was averaging a career high in points that year, and granted, you know, he played some of those games that first year, like, there was no job on the floor, so it's a different role. But you saw kind of like the idea a little bit, and especially when the Grizzlies were healthy. I think it was the January game against the Lakers where Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Marcus Smart all had over 20 points, and it looked like, you know, a recipe. It looked like something that could work, but yeah, never materialized.
Yeah, that the 23-24 season, again, he didn't play a whole lot. But the, you know, he averaged 14.5 points per game with the Grizzlies. So like he,
yep, that's the year.
And, that, mm-hmm. and that's his career high. He'd never, he never. That's the most he ever averaged in any with anybody in any season. So like he was, he played well, but yeah, just would have been nice to have one postseason with Marcus Smart.
No, it would have been, but because when you subbed out Dylan Brooks for Marcus Smart, part of the reason was you still wanted to have, you know, the high level defense,
mm-hmm.
which we see that Marcus Smart, you know, in Memphis. There was the idea of, you know, did he regress a little bit? You know, he take a step back as he turned the page into, you know, being an older player and whatnot. But he's been close to a second-team all-defense type of, you know, player defensively this season. He's really taking it back up a level with his playmaking on the defensive end, with his ability. I think his IQ kind of matches up with LeBron James a little bit. I saw LeBron talking about the nonverbal communication that the two can have,
yeah,
and things like that. And that was something that always appealed, you know, when watching Marcus Smart is, you know, the IQ and his vocal ability. It's all going to be there. But yeah, you really never got to see, you know, that stuff materialize. And you know, it was a questionable fit in Memphis the entire time because the Grizzlies already had, you know, Desmond Bane and John Morant in the backcourt. So, like, kind of morphing Marcus Smart into, like, this wing. It was kind of questionable, but I think definitely the Lakers are more suited to use his skill set, whereas, you know, you got Luke Kennard out there, but Luke Kennard's still 6'5", 6'6".
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the John Morant, Desmond Bane backcourt.
Well, no use crying over spilled milk. Let's move forward, and that's what the Grizzlies will do, and there's a lot of things that have to be done. You wrote about possibilities for the draft. We found out that the Grizzlies will pick 16th in the first round via Phoenix. We know they have a lottery pick. We just don't know where they'll pick, and we know they got a pick in the second round, early in the second round, at number 32. So give us a little synopsis about what you wrote about, maybe some possibilities with certainly everything on the table for the Grizzlies this offseason.
Yeah. I called this offseason the tone setter, guys. If you want to say, hey, we're turning the page, we're going to a new era, you need, you know, kind of that tone-setting offseason. Every team that has had a rebuild has had that. You know, if you look at the OKC situation – you know, that tone setter really came, you know, either you can say when they made that big trade, when they traded away Paul George and they ended up getting, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and all those picks,
mm-hmm.
partly that became, you know, Jalen Williams and some other guys here. But that was the first example that popped in my mind. But a lot of things have happened, you know, in order for, you know, that franchise to be successful.
How long did it take them? How long did that take them to go from rebuild to maybe not necessarily where they are now, but to competitive? How many years?
I think about three because the thing was, you know, they were, when they had Chris Paul there, you know, they sneaked into the playoffs, you know, that 1 year very early on. I think that was the 2019-20 season. But then they had a couple years in between. You know, they had a couple bad seasons. Then they had the 40-win year where they missed the playoffs. And then after that, they jumped. So, yeah, you basically had 3 years in there with no playoff appearances. And then you had before that, obviously, the first-round exit when Chris Paul came for that 1 year and kind of took them to another level. So, yeah, you're talking about a three-year process, probably four-year process. I think ideally you want it to be three because I've always been of the opinion you want to build a winner before you have to start paying guys on those second contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And because there has to be certainty that comes with that. And now if you look back on it, I mean, it wasn't the case at the time, but if you look back on it now, there wasn't as much certainty came when the Grizzlies gave, you know, all these guys those second contracts, which is why they got traded on them, which is why Dez got traded on his. Jaren got traded on his third, but, I mean, it was the first year of his third contract. And Ja's on his second contract right now, potentially going to be traded. So I think, you know, when you have guys on that second contract, the urgency goes up. But, yeah, this is the tone-setting offseason. This offseason, you're looking for, you know, a guy, a guy who can galvanize the fan base, a guy who can, you know, be, you know, kind of one of your big pieces,
yep,
you know, for this next era. But you need a high draft pick, you know, for all that to work out, too.
You wrote about the four point guards, and if they don't move up into the top four, that, mm-hmm, I mean, that's the group that they're going to be looking at in all likelihood, is that group of four point guards. Is there one of those four that you think fits what they do the best?
Man, it's interesting that you put it that way, because when you talk about fits what they do, I think about just what the Grizzlies want and all of that good stuff. The guy would probably be Kenston Fleming. You know, I wrote about how he might offer the safest floor of the four guys, and the four guys are Kenston Fleming, Michael Brown Jr., Darius Acuff Jr., and then Keaton Wagler, those four. But Kenston Fleming is already, you know, a superb defender, which is important to the Grizzlies. You know, they are entering an era. They don't want guys out there being picked on for long periods of time. You know, they want guys who can defend. They want the toolsy guys. And Kenston Fleming, of those four, he's probably the best example of that. Darius Acuff is the guy who probably has the most gaudy stats. He's the Calipari point guard. You know, he has the Reebok deal. He's that guy that probably galvanizes the fan
base. He would electrify the fan base.
Exactly.
But he's the worst defender.
Right.
He's the worst defender by a mile. So there is that part of that. Michael Brown Jr. has probably the most injury questions, and you know, there's some upside there, but there's that whole thing. And then, of course, with Wagler, he's the one guy of the four who wasn't even projected to be here.
Yeah.
You know, like he played his way into it. So it's like the tools naturally are kind of meh. You know, the shot making is superb with him. I definitely think the shot making can translate. But at the same time, you know, defensively, I'm not expecting him to be, you know, this sound, you know, superb defender. So Fleming's is the one guy that gives you, you know, that two-way potential that the Grizzlies are kind of craving. With these guys.
Not that you have any of the inside information just yet, but do you think there's a possibility that they identify one of those top four guys and look to move up using maybe the 32nd pick and their pick in the lottery? I think maybe it's too much to go lottery and 16, but if they identify, let's say it's Boozer, do you think that they'd be willing to do that?
What's your best guess? If they want to move into the top four, they're definitely going to have to package either 16 or another future first.
Okay, so 32 and 32 in the lottery moving up, that's not going to do it.
Not this year. Not this year. Especially to the top four. Like if you end up at 8 and you want to get up to 6, mm-hmm, maybe. But to go from 6 to 4 or 6 to 3, you're going to have to throw probably a future. Now, you can protect it, or like you said, use the second first. But yeah, that top four is just so well regarded. It's going to take you know, a nice price to get in there. That's why the lottery is going to be so important.
Well, more than likely, odds will tell you that they'll probably either stay at 6 or drop to the 7, maybe 8. God forbid they drop down further than that. And I know there's, you know, only what? They can go only to 10, right? They can drop down to as far as 10.
Yeah, 10 is the lowest. But it's
that'd be horrible. That would be, yeah. 10 would be a horrible position, because we talk about those point guards that you wrote about, and we talk about those first four guys. So you'd be out of the mix for everybody. But let's say they land 7 or 8, and they get one of those point guards, and they don't make any trade. Do you think it's 16 now instead of best player available? We always have that debate, best player available versus need. That now you have to go into the realm of a big because of the uncertainty of Zach Edey?
You got to draft the big this year.
Okay.
I think you got to draft the big. And part of it is that. Part of it is the uncertainty of Zach Edey. And part of it is you just need big. Like, even when Zach Edey played, the idea of downsizing as much as Memphis did, not even from just a height standpoint, but from a physicality standpoint, it was different. And you look at what Isola wants, you know, with the screening, you know, with the rim running, you know, with his bigs. You need a guy who can be impactful in that area. And quite frankly, you don't want Santi Aldama setting all those screens. You don't want Jaren Jackson Jr. setting all those screens. You need like a Reed out of UConn, you know, Mara, maybe out of Michigan. I thought Patrick Ngongba out of Duke would have been a solid option. But
how about Krivas?
He's going back. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, with the situation that they're in, they're definitely going to need another big. One is an insurance policy for Edie, as you kind of alluded to. But mm-hmm. two, they just don't have the physicality in the front court right now to match these other teams. Like you look at, you know, the Timberwolves, they have the ability to play it however you want to play it. Like, oh, you want to play some small ball and you know, stretch the floor a little bit? Okay, we can bring Naz Reid in. But if you want to have Jokic try to play bully ball all game, we got a four-time defensive player of the year for you.
Right.
So you need that versatility, but also you just have to be able to match the physicality of these teams, because you don't want to be in a situation where Zach Edey's in foul trouble and the opponent's saying, oh, okay, they're food now. You know, we can rebound, get all the rebounds. And so many times, I mean, this season was a great example of it, but you go look at the 11 games that Zach Edey played, Grizzlies are one of the best rebounding teams in the league. You go look at the games he didn't play, they're one of the worst. And that was kind of the case to a lesser degree his rookie season. And you got to be able to kind of close that gap a little bit. So, I think pick 16, pick 32, both have a couple options that you'll be able to kind of, you know, dissect through. And we'll see, you know, what the next, you know, couple months with workouts and stuff looks like. But yeah, I think you've got to draft a big.
Part of the problem is the number of guys that are going back to college, and bigs are getting overpaid in college. So they're the ones, a lot of them are going to stay. You know, we just saw Hawk yesterday from Florida as a guy, but like in Florida's keeping Condon, like they're keeping their guys, like you mentioned Gongba from Duke, like a lot of these guys who are projected in that mid to late first round are thinking, I can get overpaid for one more year of college as a big and then be a top 10 pick next year. So that number 16 pick seems to, like, on a daily basis lose a little bit of its value as another guy who might be in that range stays in college.
Yeah, and what I've taken from it more than anything, guys, is it's not the fact that, like, the Grizzlies would have drafted any of those players. Like, I didn't mock or expect, you know, like Thomas Hall, even Patrick Ngongba, like he was a good kind of backup plan, but and Braylon Mullins, like I didn't expect any of those guys to be like primary options per se for the Grizzlies. But again, you're taking away from the depth of the class.
Yeah, exactly.
So some of the guys that may be primary options now might not be available. So it's a situation where yeah, there's a depth issue. I brought it up on my podcast this morning, the idea of potentially trading the pick and trading down, because what you're seeing, at least early on, and of course, like I said, you're going to have combine workouts, you're going to have help, you know, the physicals and things like that. So there are going to be some things that we learn and that kind of shift the board a little bit. But I think when you look at it in a gist, when you get to the board from like 15 to 25, there's not a huge talent gap there. So if you're at 16 and you're saying like, oh, we like three guys here, I'm sure someone's going to want to trade up. And boom, you could add, you know, future assets.
That's
a great
point.
And you had a couple second-round picks. So, and that's another big thing for me. That first year, stockpile assets, because you put yourself in a situation where either one, you know, when you get competitive, you could just go cash in all the chips. We've seen teams do that. Brooklyn did that before. It didn't work out, but they did it. And then two, you could put yourself in a position to, even when you build that winner, that championship contender, you still have, you know, these high picks coming in, which is what OKC has right now. So, you know, it's kind of two ways you can play it, but I think you definitely should be stockpiling all the assets you can get right now.
I think that's great. I think you're right on with that. We're completely out of time, but I do want to pick your brain next week on And again, this is looking into a crystal ball. We don't know what's happening. We expect Ja to be traded. You know, will they let Brandon Clark go? But is there a free agent out there that makes sense under their financial structure that they could pick up? I know free agents don't readily make themselves available to Memphis, but, you know, maybe something that could be brewing down the road, depending on what else happens with this team and the transactions that are made. So we'll pick your brain on that and other things, DeMichael, next week. He is DeMichael Cole from the Commercial Appeal, the Grizzlies beat writer, and all-around great guy, also co-host of the Locked On Grizz podcast with Joe Mullinax. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at DeMichael C and listen to him every Thursday, or make that every Wednesday right here on Sports 56 Mornings. Great stuff, as always, DeMichael. Thank you so much.
All right, take care, guys.
You too. Yeah, I wonder if there's somebody out there from a big standpoint. I'm not talking about they're not getting the best guys out there, the most expensive guys out there. But I don't know what the financial structure is right now, where they stand. And maybe a free agency is the way to go. Who knows? Maybe they can get somebody there. We'll take a break. We'll come back halfway through on this Wednesday edition of Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli right here on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
You have opinions?
I think it's over.
Of course you do.
I don't think it's that simple.
Everyone does.
I got all the answers.
Hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 360-8255.
Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Isn't it a lovely morning?
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:34 the time. The NFL draft begins tomorrow. Round one on Thursday. Rounds two and three on Friday. Rounds four through seven on Saturday. I was looking at the story during the break from USA Today. They did a story where they had five different AI chatbots to predict the first round of the NFL draft. They used Microsoft Copilot, Google Gemini, Grok, Meta AI, and ChatGPT to come up with their selections. They did all right. The bots did okay. First player selected, unanimous, Fernando Mendoza, Indiana, going to the Raiders. Then it got a little interesting with the second pick overall, which the New York Jets own. Now, three bots went with Arvell Reese from Ohio State. Good chance he gets picked. I know David Bailey's been mentioned, and I'm not 100% sure it'll be Reese, but three out of the five say Reese. Okay. Microsoft Copilot goes Jeremiah Love. Now, the New York Jets have done some weird things in the past. I know Jeremiah Love has a chance to be a really good player. I don't think the Jets are taking him at number two. I don't think that's the case.
I would not think so.
But the worst is ChatGPT, because they think the New York Jets are going with a player that is not even in the draft. Oregon's Dante Moore. That would be right up the alley of the Jets. Remember the one time the Jets couldn't get their pick in time? I mean, things like that. So, yeah, that ain't going to work out. Then the Arizona Cardinals with the third pick. There's one for David Bailey. Makes sense. There's one for Caleb Downs. He can go that early. There's one for Reuben Bain. Maybe a little early for him. And then there's two for Francis Moinoa from Miami, the offensive tackle. I'm not going to read these all, but just, you know, you get the idea about the bots. The Titans have the fourth pick, and we'll be talking with Teresa Walker from the Associated Press at 9:05 about the Titans. This one's interesting because a lot of talk has been Jeremiah Love. And so three of the bots have Jeremiah Love going to Tennessee. One has Arvell Reese. Obviously, that was one of the bots who did not have Reese going second. And then the fifth is Caden Proctor from Alabama. Proctor is really interesting, Eli. Offensive lineman over the years for Alabama. Numerous first-round picks. High selections. Wasn't a great year for Alabama. But Proctor, who is definitely going to be picked in the first round. I have seen Proctor, and I'm not even talking the bots, I'm talking the humans and their mock drafts. I've seen Proctor anywhere from 4, 5, 6 to 24, 25. I don't understand. What is the issue with Proctor?
Well, he's a bit of a freak, obviously, with his size and athleticism. But he also wasn't – he didn't have a great year. So you're looking at the just 6'7", 350 monster, but also some of the game films going to tell you that maybe it doesn't project as well, I think, is probably the biggest question. Some will question that, and others will just say, listen, 6'7", 350, and he ran – what did he run? I remember what it was, the 40 that he ran, and there's be like, freaks that big and that athletic, we will figure out a way that they, to make them really good at this level.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a – I mean, you're rolling the dice sometimes with the offensive linemen, but it's understandable why you would take somebody like that. A lot of them have lived up to those expectations. Others have fizzled, but I think that's the same with every position. But offensive linemen and taking an offensive lineman that early, I mean, especially tackles – Makes sense, especially if you're okay in the department of edge rushers, because this is a heavy edge rushing first round possibility. I mean, you're talking about, I think there could be 6 to 8 edge rushers taken in the first round. And if you already are set, you got your quarterback, your edge rushers, and you're trying to help that offensive line, Proctor makes sense. I can't tell you specifically every team that he makes sense for, and this one again with the Titans. But I don't see the Titans doing that.
They need offensive line help. That's for sure. You want to make sure you are protecting your massive investment from last year in Cam Ward. So obviously the Titans need a lot. Titans need plenty. They need stuff. They need help everywhere. You know, that's why a lot of people would say that them going for Jeremiah Love doesn't make a lot of sense. Well, yes, he helps Cam Ward in the backfield, but you got Cam Ward, you got Jeremiah Love, but if you have nobody to block, if your offensive line is terrible, what good does it do to have a great quarterback and a great running back
right. With
no offensive line to block for them? So,
right.
They could go a lot of different directions. They need help just about everywhere, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They need to get help for Cam Ward basically everywhere.
Yes, but if you've identified Jeremiah Love as this absolute game-breaking star, future stud running back, and we know with running backs, their shelf life is not that long, but some have broken out of the pack to become those superstars. If you feel that that's the guy, then even though you need help on the offensive line, certainly for the quarterback, but for the running backs as well, but if you got a guy that can change the game, then you have to go with that guy. And if that's the way, and again, we'll talk to Teresa about that, but if that's the way you think, then you're going to go with that running back. But if not, like I said, never a bad thing to go with the offensive lineman.
But you also, with the Titans, you have to understand, too, how much say does Robert Saleh have in the draft, being a defensive guy, as you mentioned, with all of the edge rushers that are available, and the Titans need that. Is that going to be where he wants to go? Because he looks at that and says, you know, he looks number one at the defense and says, we need a lot of help there. We could get one of these big time edge rushers.
Yes. Well, that's the yin and yang, right? That's the tug of war you have with staffs. I mean, these are big staffs, but the buck stops with Saleh. Daboll's there now. I'm sure he'd love Jeremiah Love, but Saleh is a defensive guy. Doesn't mean, though, that he doesn't think we need an electric running back. If he doesn't think that Tony Pollard is the guy this upcoming season in 2026, that they need to move to another guy, a younger running back. Not that Pollard's old. Pollard is a solid running back, but he's not, I think his better days probably behind him. Solid, good catching running back out of the backfield, good hands. But Jeremiah Love, if you think he's that star, then you go with Jeremiah Love.
Today over at East Coast Wings and Grill, it's Essential Worker Wednesday for you construction workers, electricians, plumbers, HVAC contractors. That's 20% off on Essential Worker Wednesday. Plus, kids eat free on Wednesdays. That's from 3 p.m. to close. Kids 10 and under eat free with the purchase of an adult entree. So you can take advantage of that. Of course, you got happy hour from 3:30 to 6:30. That's every Monday through Friday that you can take advantage of that great deal over at East Coast Wings and Grill. All kinds of great food to enjoy for lunch, for dinner, during happy hour, whenever. Of course, also plenty of good drinks to enjoy. And always great action on the TVs with Major League Baseball, with the NBA playoffs continuing, of course, over the next few days, starting tomorrow with the NFL draft. You can watch it all up at East Coast Wings and Grill while enjoying some of that great food and great drinks as well. Located in Bartlett, just off Highway 64, right between the Lowe's and the Walmart there of Highway 64. Great food, great place to watch the action, East Coast Wings and Grill.
If I remember correctly, last year in the 25 draft, there were no Tigers taken, right? Memphis Tigers.
I don't remember, honestly.
I don't think there was. This year, there's the possibility, I think a strong possibility, that Travis Burke is being selected. But there could be a couple of offensive linemen from the Tigers that are selected in the draft. I don't think you're going to see that happen on Thursday or Friday. But certainly, I think there's that possibility. And, of course, locally, Jake Golday, friend of the show, is a guy that's projected to be second day, more than likely second round, the stud out of the University of Cincinnati and Arlington High School. So that's one of the local guys we'll be keeping an eye on with the draft. When we come back, college football, they're having some meetings down in Texas. Not going to happen this weekend, but the conversation again about playoff expansion is going on. We will discuss that when we return. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Not only can you listen to your favorite shows on Sports 56, you can also watch video of the shows live on Twitter and YouTube. Watch and listen every day
at Sports 56 WHBQ.
Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
To reveal the full spectrum of its dazzling color.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Today is day two of the College Football Playoff Governance Committee meetings in Dallas, Texas. That's the 10 FBS conference commissioners and Notre Dame's athletic director, Pete Bavakwa. It's their spring meetings, annual meetings. But the committee obviously has a big topic in front of them, and that's the future of the college football playoff, which once again will stand at 12 teams going into the 2026 season. But for me, I don't even know why you invite everybody. Just invite Tony Battiti, Mike Slive.
Don't invite him.
No, don't invite Mike. He's passed.
He will not make it.
Sankey, and put him in a room and let him slug it out. It comes down to those two. So, yeah, it's nice to have the commissioner of the MAC there. It's nice to have our friend Tim Pernetti from the American Conference. But really, this comes down to the Big Ten and the battle versus the SEC about the future. That's why they had to settle on keeping 12, because they couldn't come to a conclusion. The Big Ten wants more. The SEC, they want 24. The SEC, I think, would settle on 16. They couldn't even settle on that. There's going to be more teams in the playoff. That's a certainty. Whether it's 16 or 24, I have no idea. But, again, it's nice to have all these other guys, these other commissioners, and Pete Bavakwa there. But what say do they have in reality?
Very little. But they're also, I mean, they're not just talking about, like,
right, there's other
Russ
topics.
Dellinger talked about, like, the expansion is part of a very big agenda that they, like, it's a small part where they might talk about expansion. They may not. They've got other stuff that they're worried about.
It is not a small part. I mean, it may not be, like I said, this is not, they're not going to change anything this week as far as that's concerned. We know who eventually will get this changed, if it changes at all. Those two guys, Sankey and Petiti. But it's still an important topic moving forward. It's a financial boon for everybody, and it's still maybe squeezing out the little guy. Who knows? I think the group of now six with the Pac-12, or whatever they're calling it, coming back into existence, not as a power conference, I think they'll still be a player. But even if it expands to 24, are they going to continue to have one seat? Is that the way it's going to be? But here's a head coach. This is Kyle Whittingham. This is Chris Lowe's story. Kyle Whittingham, who's now at Michigan, right, was at Utah. On the playoff, he said 16 is the right number. This is just one person's opinion. But only in a super conference structure where you govern yourselves, the NCAA is not involved. We have our own commissioner. That's, again, one man's thoughts, one head coach's opinion, but people have talked about that going down that road. The NCAA already is not powerful when it comes to college football. We understand that. And they're saying to have that, we've heard those rumblings as well, having some sort of grand poobah leading the way in college football.
The interesting thing about this is Ross Dellinger in his story talked about there is a 14-person White House subcommittee.
Right.
That includes the commissioners of the Power Four conferences and the American. Pernetti is the other commissioner that is on that.
Really?
Notre Dame's athletic director is there. You've got the ESPN and Fox executives. You've got Cody Campbell that's part of that. You've got some other big
time. Really? Cody Campbell's part of that?
You got some other big time millionaire, billionaire people from the business world that are a part of it.
Who from the White House? Is there somebody from politics that's involved?
I think there may be one or two. I'm not even sure.
Okay.
And they are having discussions. And apparently out of that committee, they believe that one of the task, I guess, they've been wanting to do is figure out ways to make more money for some of these universities who are struggling with the new costs and everything else. And so what he said, there is a lot of support out of that committee, which again includes these commissioners, for going to 24. Now, he did say that notably Greg Sankey was not on the call for the meeting last week.
Shocking.
And I think the...
Nor Mike Sly, by the way.
I think the ESPN executive may not have been a part of it. But one of the things he talked about is that
well, ESPN wants it, right? They want the expansion.
They don't want 24, according to what he said. They're hesitant on 24.
Okay.
They're already pushing games to TNT. I don't know that they necessarily want.
Well, Fox, Fox wants them. That's what it is. It was Fox. Yeah, the Fox CEO.
As he said, that three of the four Power Conference commissioners and Notre Dame all either expressed outright support for 24 or the willingness to do a thorough examination of going to 24 like that. So this committee, again, and apparently all of the guys outside of the conferences, like the billionaires and stuff that are in the room, they seem to all want to go to 24.
And I assume Pernetti too.
So I have no idea if he did not mention him one way or another, as far as that is concerned.
Imagine he's in that room. He's like, hey, I'm over here too. Shut up. Sit in the corner.
But yeah, so it's you've got that went on last week, and they will continue, I guess, to meet. I don't know. But he also talked about the fact that within the SEC, there is more and more support for going to 24 amongst coaches, amongst ADs for going to 24 as well. So
makes sense.
It looks more and more like 24 is going to end up being the number. You know, they've just got to figure out, you know, their thing that they're talking about is doing the top eight, get the bye, the first two rounds on campus, then going to the bowl games, all of that stuff. Part of it will become the TV situation. How do they do the bidding on the extra games? Is that how is that done? All of these things. But he talks about, seems more and more just around the college football world it seems more and more people are on board with going to 24, along with what the Big Ten, which, you know, the Big Ten obviously was the one that wanted that to begin with.
Why has Sankey been apprehensive?
I don't know. I think he probably doesn't want to get rid of the SEC championship game. And if you're at 24, the SEC championship game makes no sense whatsoever.
Right. But coaches and ADs have come out publicly, some of them, and have said, get rid of it. I mean, you go to 24, there's going to be more teams, and you know there's going to be more teams coming out of the SEC that'll be in the playoff.
I mean, you'd have to ask Greg Sankey that. I don't know, but I'm sure he's got his
reasons. James, get Greg Sankey on the line right now. Please, can you do that for us? The other thing is, okay, Pernetti included is good. Throw the American a bone. Throw the group of six a bone. But do they get two slots if it goes to 24? What are we talking about here? I wonder how that fits in. Is it still just the one lone survivor?
I think at the 24, it's just going to come down to the top 24 in the rankings. If you're the top 24 of the rankings, you're going.
Well, if that's the case, over the last several years, the American, not the American, but the group of five, now to be group of six, has landed a couple of those teams in the top 25 when it's all said and done.
Maybe
they can get multiple teams. Who knows?
You know, so I would guess that with that, it will be the highest, but again, it will be top 24. If there isn't a group of six team ranked in the top 24, then I guess they would get the 24th spot at least to make them happy. I don't know, with the top, the 24 team model, it is just the top 24 ranked teams, because there's not conference championship games to decide conference champions or anything like that. So it's just the top 24 in the rankings.
It's still pretty wild, Jay Ham. You have these meetings and, you know, invite all the commissioners. And of course, Notre Dame. Make sure it's a gold table that the AD of Notre Dame is sitting at, a little bit far away from everybody else, because we have to make sure that we have a spotlight that's right on that Notre Dame guy. Make sure that everything that happens, and make sure Notre Dame's there, and make sure Notre Dame's here, and make sure Notre Dame. Stop. Again,
they are the most powerful school. It's not even close. I've said that all along. They don't make special rules.
I'm tongue in cheek.
They don't give them the benefit of the doubt like you say they do. But they are the most powerful school, and it's not even close.
And it should.
They have the same power as every other conference.
It shouldn't be that way. How they made a monster out of them is beyond me. I don't get it. I just don't understand it.
You're going to walk out of that parking lot one day about 10:05, and it's going to be about 100 leprechauns looking for you.
And you know what? I have a lot of friends that are Notre Dame alums, or they root for Notre Dame and all that. I went to a game there. Fantastic. Nothing like being in South Bend. Everything was great. It cracks me up. It just cracks me up. It's like, it just seems like it's special treatment. It's like, join a conference, for goodness sakes. Join a freaking conference. Stop it. We have our own network. I understand you have your own. We're the most powerful school. Yeah, we have the Pope on our side. I get it. I understand it. But come on, guys. Corky's, I understand that. For lunch, for dinner, Corky's. Anytime's a good time for Corky's Ribs and Barbecue, one of the great barbecue joints in the Mid-South, in the entire South, in the country. Let's be honest here. Because you can send Corky's anywhere in the country. All you have to do is head over to the website or stop by and have Corky's shipped wherever you want it to be shipped. And of course, as far as delivered Corky's barbecue, yes, they can deliver it to your home or office. It's a set price at Corky's. I think it's $3.99. Meanwhile, you could have any of the other services, the DoorDashes of the world, delivered to your home or office. So when you're thinking about lunch today at work, Corky sounds good. Or dinner. You're going to bring dinner home to the family? How about Corky's? Go through the no-contact drive-through. They got four locations, Poplar Avenue in Memphis, Poplar Avenue in Collierville, Germantown Parkway in Cordova, Goodman Road in Olive Branch. The Q, the ribs, outstanding. Slow-smoked barbecue. The cheese and sausage plate. How about a starter? You can get the barbecue nachos as well. That'll fill you up right there. But they have other things outside the barbecue family. Award-winning catfish plate, tamales, burgers. They have great salads as well. Fantastic desserts. It is Corky's, and if you've got an event coming up, you want it catered, they can do that for you, starting as low as $7.99 per person. They got lunch specials every day, party packs that start at just $7.49. You can't beat it. Corky's Ribs and Barbecue, open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week. We're talking to the Hall of Famer, Teresa Walker, when we return. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Available locally on your radio dial as well as around the world online at sports56whbq.com. Take us with you everywhere by downloading the Sports 56 app. And at home, just say, Alexa, play Sports 56. Wherever you are, it's easy to stay tuned to Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.